Welcome to Gambling with an Edge with your hosts Bob Dancer and Michael Shackelford. Bob Dancer is America's premier video poker writer and teacher. He's in the Video Poker Hall of Fame, and he has written 10 books, including Video Poker for the Intelligent Beginner and the best-selling Million Dollar Video Poker. He helped develop the Video Poker for Winners computer software. Michael Shackelford is the force behind the websites Wizard of Odds, Wizard of Vegas, and Wizard of Macau. An actuary by profession, Michael has been analyzing the whole gamut of casino games since 1995. His Wizard of Odds website explains the best strategies for 140 different casino games. Michael is also the author of Gambling 102, The Best Strategies for All Casino Games, and is a former adjunct professor of gaming math at UNLV. The goal of the show is that, by listening, you will be a more knowledgeable gambler tomorrow than you were yesterday. And now, here are Bob and Mike.
Good evening. Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. I'm Bob Dancer. Michael Shackelford seems to be delayed, so if we're hoping he shows up, and if not, we're gonna go we're gonna go without him. Tonight's guest is Bob Nersesian, gaming attorney. It's been a whole 2 weeks since he's been here, and what he said about the device law 2 weeks ago created a lot of emails, so we've invited him back to continue that conversation. I received an email at gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com about point multipliers. I've been regularly telling you that I very much value double points at the South Point. Somebody asked what the big deal is. Some casinos regularly have triple points, 5 times points, 7 times points, or whatever. Why should we get excited about double points? There are two factors in play here. First, the South Point Slot Club pays 0.30%, which is 3 times as much as the clubs that pay 0.10%. So double points at the South Point is worth the same as 6x points at casinos like Coast, Station Casinos, and certain others. The second factor is what games are available for the stakes you want to play. Now, if you play single line quarters, the best game for you in casinos in Vegas is one that offers full pay deuces. Now, South Point doesn't. If you play larger stakes for that, up to $10 play quick quads, which is what I'd play, and at $60 a hand, then double point days offers a more lucrative than you'll find for those stakes almost anywhere else in town. I've played some of the free or semi-free pro football contest. This year I have 16 entries, 6 at the Palms where I paid $50 to get them and they gave me $50 in free play immediately. So essentially that's free. And 5 entries each on Shirley's and my card at Coast. I decided not to do it anymore. Several times this year, they've had several hundred people tied for first place, and the prizes are something like $9 or $12 or maybe up to a big $16. Takes me about an hour a week to make my picks and enter them, and I haven't even won one of the rinky-dink prizes yet, so it seems to be that this is not a good use of my time. So I'm going to stop doing it, and that's that. Let's talk to Bob Nersesian.
Good evening, Bob.
Hello. All right, good. I have a couple different pages here. My eyes are going, and I'm going to tell you about exactly why that is in a while. But so I lost which page I was on. So it's been a long 2 weeks since you were here. Welcome to Gambling with an Edge.
Always a pleasure. I'm surprised I'm back this quick.
Ah, well, we are too. Pleasantly surprised. 2 weeks ago, we asked you about using a video poker product like Wizard Las Vegas or Win Poker at the machines. You were very clear that it's a crime in Nevada. We've had lots of email about this sent to gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com. Some of the emails said, aha, I knew it was a crime. Others said, the entire device law is flawed. Richard Munchkin was one of the ones who said the latter. Now, on last week's show...
Just where you were right there, I agree with both perspectives.
Ha, good. All right. So on last week's show, Shaq maintained he didn't think it was a flaw. He said when casinos say these machines offer over 99%, he thinks they're open, that everything is fair game. Let's assume Shaq continued to use Wizard video poker in the casinos, and eventually he got arrested for it. He decided, as a matter of principle, to challenge the device law. So he came with his to you with his checkbook wide open and said, "Will you take the case? In your opinion, what are his chances for success, and how much would it cost to find this out?"
First, pretty much anybody coming to me with their checkbook wide open will have their case taken by me.
You're a whore, Bob, but a good one.
What are his chances? You're asking, in a sense, you're asking the wrong person, because I already have a predetermined and set concept of where this would go. I haven't researched it thoroughly, and I don't want to break my arm patting myself on the back, but when it comes to going through statutes and stuff, I'm pretty good at finding holes or making them flawed such that they can be challenged. Off the top of my head, challenging any statute starts at 10%. None of them are 100%. I'd take it up to maybe 30 or 40%, but he may find...
A 30 or 40% chance of winning the case.
Of success.
Okay.
Yet, there are, I'm sure, other attorneys who have looked at this and found a different perspective to the statute, or might have angles on it different. All lawyers approach things differently, are of different quality, but also are of different perspectives and philosophies. And so far as hiring me, I think that that would be an error, because he could probably find an attorney that might have a perspective that is different than mine. And I do think that law is flawed. I think it's terribly flawed. If the computer is doing nothing else beyond what the human mind can do, i.e. accounting computer, what's the issue, really? Okay.
Well, it kind of depends. If you have a three-card straight flush and two high cards, there are 1,081 different possible draws that you can make to that three-card straight flush. Now, that is a simple accounting problem, but...
That's a poker hand played against other human beings, generally.
Well, no, this is on a machine. We're talking about a machine,
yeah.
And... They do the calculation of what the EV is for each of those 1,081s is just a calculation problem, but somewhere well over 99% people can't do that.
But 99% of the people can have the optimal play card in their hand and make that decision.
Strategy cards appear to be legal. They're not. The device law talks about computer devices, electronic and mechanical. So strategy cards themselves seem to be legal.
Actually, there would even be an argument, and here's part of the flaw of the statute, that a strategy card itself would be a device. But the problem is that the casinos hand out strategy cards, and everybody, by essentially consent, has agreed that strategy cards aren't covered by the law.
Except the law, and I'm reading it, it says computerized electronic, electrical, or mechanical device. So
and you're picking up the card, and you're looking at it, and I've seen prosecutors make arguments far more stretched than saying
that's
a mechanical device. I understand what you're saying, Bob, but there's going on the East Coast right now prosecutions against card pullers for computer fraud. And a card puller, I think most of your audience would know what that is.
A card pulling is when you're dealt a hand that is going to score well, your player's card falls out of the machine accidentally, and then you play the hand so that the initial deal of five coins is charged against your account, but the win is not registered as belonging to you. That's what card pulling is.
Well, and you see... The way you just said it is perpetuating what I feel is something that's injurious to the advantage gambler. Pointedly, it doesn't fall out of the machine. You pull it out of the machine.
Yes,
who programmed that machine? Who gave you that opportunity? How is that there and available? And who set up the program for what the points are and how much they're worth? The casino did. You are taking advantage of their programming, the game they're offering, playing it in a way that is not prohibited by any signage or anything else on the machine, and to say that the person who is taking advantage of what is offered is themselves committing a computer fraud is It's sophistry. It doesn't work. But the prosecutors in a couple of states on the East Coast have tried it. The most recent attempt, though, has resulted, from what I understand, in an outright dismissal by the court. I believe this was in New Jersey, and I think the judge's ruling, while looking at the prosecutor, was something along the lines of, are you freaking insane?
And part of that is whatever the device law is in Nevada is going to be different than the device law in New Jersey. And so
it's all I'm talking about is prosecutorial discretion and stretching. And when I say that, I'm going to bring up another highfalutin legal doctrine called the rule of lenity, which actually says that when a prosecutor or the courts are looking at a criminal charge, creativeness is not the benchmark. If an ordinary person would not recognize that what is being done is criminal, or if the law is ambiguous, this rule says that you construe the law in favor of the person charged, not in favor of the state. I.e., criminal statutes are supposed to be clear and unambiguous, which would then give Michael a little more argument on the whole device thing. But the law is what it is, and it seems to say what it says.
Okay, so in a sort of related question, it does say computerized mechanical devices are no good if they're used for certain things. Strategy cards seem to be okay. Let's say we're using an iPad, and we put the strategy card on the iPad in a Word document. Well, Word is a Microsoft product, but whatever the iPad equivalent is to a Word document, then so now we're using this iPad as a reading device, not as a calculating device. Would that violate the device law?
You don't know. And that's not the answer you want to hear. But the problem is, and I just went over it, is the prosecutorial discretion coupled with the fact that you're dealing with the most favored industry in the state. You've got 4 game protection personnel, 3 security guards, and 1 cop sitting there while Michael would be being held. So you've got 7 people going, this is a crime, this is a crime, this is a crime. And Mike going, it's not a crime, and asking a cop who might have a college degree but certainly has no experience in gaming to decide this complex, ambiguous statute in that circumstance. What is going to happen? Michael's going to jail. Okay? That's my take on it if it's on an iPad too.
Okay, good. Now, we've beaten the device law to death, although I'm quite sure you could speak about it for another 2 hours easily. Now, is your success in winning sizable judgments against casinos putting you out of business?
I wish that it were.
Really? You wish you were doing something else?
I'm 55 years old. Boy, this is like the hardest thing to admit in the world, but it's time for an exit strategy, okay? And my caseload keeps going up and up and up. Now, I've expanded a little bit in the spectrum, too, because I take a lot of non-AP cases. And I'll say that occurs because of just a simple fact. Casino security is insane. They don't mean to be insane, but they do insane things. And it may well be the product of any large-scale endeavor with mixed personalities coupled with the power that's given or the ostensible power that's given at any given moment.
Combined with minimum wage and you get what you pay for.
There's all of that, yes. The casinos themselves, I anecdotally bring cases and I see between one case and the next case, the security manual is actually rewritten to address the circumstance that gave rise to the prior case that resulted in substantial payments and large attorney's fees to the casino. And that manual now has language in there that tells their personnel, don't you ever, ever, ever dare do this. And yet, as recently as 3 months ago, I had a client come in who was backroomed so he could be trespassed because he was a suspected card counter. Nobody in the casino industry of any stature has thought that that was legal for at least a decade at this point. That doesn't mean that the guy at the end of the line doesn't think so, and it doesn't mean that these innocent people aren't getting handcuffed. They are, and it's still going on. So, no, it's not slowing down at all. And as to the insanity, our legislature here is just, and this is Nevada I'm talking about again, but they're geometrically increasing the problem by attempting to construe or pass statutes to protect casino game protection, which in turn backfires on them because the bottom line is juries are reasonable. So if there's a statute that seems to indicate that in certain circumstances you can browbeat or even rough up someone or falsely imprison them,
mm-hmm.
but it's ambiguous, the juries and even many of the judges are not going to look at a violation of civil rights under that statute as something that is going to foreclose large damages. So what you end up with is casinos sitting here relying on the legislature thinking they're helping them, and all the damage awards going up through the roof. The legislature should just step out of this and get back to where the law is. This is a public business offering a public amusement. It should be open to the public, and don't try and fine-tune all these little things in the middle that create all these issues.
All right. I can see you have some strong feelings on this.
Am I yelling? I'm sorry.
No, you're using your let's talk to the jury voice. Good. Let's go on to a different subject.
I have a let's talk to the jury voice?
Yeah,
my goodness.
So.
A couple weeks ago, somebody stated that, the judges here in Pennsylvania haven't quite drank in the Bob Kool-Aid yet. And I went, I have Kool-Aid? And now you're telling me I have a jury voice. My head is going to explode. It's getting that big.
Well, maybe we should talk about your exit strategy instead. All right, different subject. On a recent show, Blackjack Hall of Famer Arnold Snyder was talking about his new book called Risk of Ruin. In one of the minor scenes in that book, the main character, Bart, a blackjack hold card player, was going through the black market to obtain ID in a fake name that he would use in Las Vegas casinos. He tried to get a fake Nevada driver's license, but it was advised instead to have a driver's license from another state, perhaps Michigan or North Carolina, simply because Nevada casinos are very good at spotting fake Nevada driver's licenses and not so good at spotting fake licenses from somewhere else. Although this was a made-up scene in a novel, generally speaking, is that good advice?
I am not going to speak to violating the law. And if what he's doing is illegal, and if he is using a fake or false name, it is illegal, then no, it's not something you should do. However, let me point out, and this goes to what you were saying and what Arnold is saying, get away from the idea of fake ID and false names, okay? Here's the law in virtually every state in the country. Anybody can use any name or go by any name they want to at any time, so long as it is not for an illegal or fraudulent purpose. The name they choose to go by is neither false nor fake if it meets the criteria I just set. In Nevada, it seems pretty clear that card counting is legal and not fraudulent. There's even a case that addresses it, the Chen case. Therefore, going by a name that is chosen to play blackjack legally in Nevada, but it is not your birth name, presents neither a false name or a fake name. It presents a legal alias. Now, if he is trying to establish a legal alias, yes, that's good advice, because in Nevada, an unauthorized driver's license, possession of an unauthorized driver's license, is a crime. The rub is that the statute that defines driver's license says issued by the Nevada Department of Motor Vehicles.
Uh-huh.
So, the Michigan license or the Iowa license or what have you is not a license issued by the Nevada Department of Motor Vehicles, and you won't be prosecuted under a, or you should not be able to be. I can't say that again, because again, of when you look at the prosecutorial discretion, I can't say that a prosecutor is not going to bring that case, but using that Michigan driver's license should not result in a fake driver's license charge. Now, there's another charge that is called a false ID charge.
Okay.
Which, that one, you might be able to construe the Michigan driver's license violates. There's substantial law out there that says that, too, requires a fraudulent purpose. And we already know that using a name other than your own name is not a fraudulent purpose, but a legal purpose. However, it says to provide a false identity, status, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, and has a list of stuff. Arguably, a wrong birth date or a wrong address or anything along those lines might be presenting a false status that could fall under that law. I know this is getting long, drawn, and complex, but the best advice I can give is if you are getting a foreign driver's license, have an address on there where mail that is delivered to that address will actually reach you. Use your actual birth date and make everything except the name true.
Okay, good. Our guest last week...
The name is still true. Make everything except... Make everything true, and the name remains true because you can use any name you want, and that is the name you've adopted.
Okay. Our guest last week was Elliot Jacobson. On his website, apheat.net, he tells about a backrooming incident where he was abused and eventually received a settlement, the terms of which he cannot disclose. Jacobson's position is that this was not done by a rogue casino, but rather by rogue surveillance guys in a legitimate casino. James Grosjean, player extraordinaire who you've successfully represented, seems to believe that all casinos are scum and deserve to be treated as such. Tommy Hyland, a Blackjack Hall of Famer, agrees with Grosjean. Of these two views, which one more closely represents your opinion on the subject?
Well, I don't understand Elliot's perspective, because if it's the surveillance that was in place and they did it, what makes them rogue or what makes them anything other than the casino? You can't say it's not a rogue casino or a rogue action because the employees who were doing their job within that casino were doing their job. And as I understand it, generally all surveillance is ever doing in these situations, and I'm not speaking to anything vis-a-vis Elliot's particular case, but surveillance espies known advantage gamblers or even suspected advantage gamblers by using various databases or by actually counting down shoes and watching their play, and they are there to spot advantage gamblers. Okay, that's all they do. From there, they have a radio. Okay, so any actions that happen down the road are off of information that comes from surveillance. And that information, from my experience, is you have, in short speak, you have an advantage player at table 217, seat 2. Okay, so how does that make them rogue? But that's what results in Elliot's these activities.
In Elliot's case, they took him in, they backroomed him, they threatened him.
Surveillance didn't do that. Why would he lay it on surveillance? I'm lost. All surveillance would have done in Elliot's case, from the circumstances presented, would likely have been to say, Elliot Jacobson's on site. Elliot Jacobson is a known advantage player, and here's where you can find them.
Then perhaps I misspoke. Elliot's position was the security guys at these casinos who were the ones who took him back.
Who were rogue? Then why is it even reported by surveillance, which it is, if the casino management and game protection doesn't expect this to be the very action? I think what we're coming up with is that, yeah, I agree with Tommy and James, and I don't understand Elliot's position.
Okay. All right, good. Now, in one of your earlier visits over a year ago, you talked about a situation where a casino overpays a player. I think what you said is if the player knows that it's an overpayment, then it's a crime to accept the overpayment. Perhaps a felony if the overpayment is sizable enough. But if the player doesn't know it's an overpayment, then it's not a crime. My first question is briefly, am I stating this accurately enough? More or less.
I believe so.
All right, good.
All right, I'm going to jump in here as you say all right. that. With everything I say on this radio show is largely opinion, some intense research, but please, nobody attach any warranty or guarantee on anything I'm saying. The law is an amorphous blob that is sometimes not even understood by the best scholars on it. Look at a Supreme Court decision. In the last year, I think we've had 9 of them that were split 5-4. That means supposedly the best legal minds in the world could not agree on deciphering these very types of questions.
All right, good. So assuming I'm stating it correctly, then it seems like if you're accused of accepting an overpayment, the first thing you should do is shut up. Because if they have to prove you knew it, you don't want to be admitting that you knew it. So shutting up is extra good advice in these particular circumstances. Is that correct?
Yes.
So you give your name, and I don't want to be held, and I want to talk to my lawyer, and that's it, basically.
Are you talking approached by security or approached by police?
I'm not making that distinction.
If you're approached by security, your response should be, you know what? I play here. I don't have any idea what you're talking about. This is if you don't have any idea what you're talking about. And to make this kind of accusation to me or to come at me in this circumstance is insulting and base and demeaning. So I'm picking up my chips and leaving. Okay? And then do that. If they let you, great. If they don't, then shut up. And I'm going to take the shut up to a new level, too.
Okay.
When the police officer shows up, okay, what commonly occurs is they offer to show you the video. Well, we'll show you the video. And now you have to make a judgment call. But my personal opinion, and this is pure opinion, is it doesn't do you any good to see that video. And more importantly, when you think about it, why should you have to look at their stinking video? How many times do you think that surveillance saw an underpayment? When have you ever heard of surveillance coming up to a dealer and saying, you underpaid this patron? Look, we're going to show you on the video. Or giving you an opportunity to look at a video. They have a legal requirement to have these games taped, yes. But the contents of those tapes are secret vis-a-vis the patron. And it is simply unfair in the extreme, in my opinion, that they get to collect all their stupid mistakes made in favor of a patron. And the patron has no similar rights nor even ability to gain such knowledge. If there was a law that said when an underpayment is made and it is seen by surveillance, it must be corrected and the player must be informed, maybe there'd be a more even playing field. But right now...
Well, that's not going to happen.
I know it's not going to happen because that is contrary to everything that the goal is here. So back where we were. Why should you play their unfair game, you know? And moreover, that's it. And I've had this case in court, and it's settled. That argument wasn't sitting too well with the judge, but I think the argument has some validity, and I think that the lack of balance here should give you the right and ability to say, I don't want to see your stupid tape.
All right, but you can show it to my lawyer if you want. And good luck with that one.
Yeah, because they can't see. Here's where there might be some balance. Remember, they can't sue to get that money back.
They can't.
No, not in Nevada. That's a gambling debt. In Nevada, only patrons can bring a claim on a gambling debt, and casinos cannot, unless they are supported by a credit instrument.
Like taking out a marker. If I take out a marker for $20,000 and don't pay it, they can come after me.
Depends on the nature of the marker, but yes.
Okay. Different subject. There's a case happened several years ago where two Las Vegas gamblers went to Puerto Rico, won something like $100,000, and it was seized at an airline stopover in Atlanta on suspicion it was drug money. The money's been returned. But they're now suing a DEA agent. Apparently, it was recently ruled that the case may be tried in Las Vegas rather than in Atlanta. Now, obviously, Las Vegas is more convenient to both the gamblers and the attorneys. But is there another reason why you want to try this case in Nevada rather than Georgia? Do you figure Nevada is going to give you a home court ruling?
Now you've admitted that it's my case.
I've suggested it's your case. Are you admitting that it's your case?
Yeah, that's my case. And you can find it on the net at Fiore versus Walden is the name of the case. It's public knowledge.
Right.
But, that case, you've accurately described the current circumstance. There are some other factors that would weigh into the considerations that you're talking about. Certainly, the convenience and the fairness to the parties litigating where they live, which is where the agent obviously knew they were going to suffer the loss of the money. They were at the gate to get on the plane when the agent approached them. Okay? Their contact with their contacts with Georgia at that point were as follows. We are going to take three more steps, be on a plane, and out of your state. Okay? Their contacts with Nevada were as follows. All of that money's going to land in Nevada. That's where we're going to spend it. And this agent, the allegations in the complaint say, and I believe that they are likely true, that the plaintiff said, look, can you leave me $27 for taxi fare so that I can get home? And the agent said no. And that's even cited in the case itself, the Ninth Circuit opinion. Other factors that weigh towards here. This is a DEA task force seizure, okay? If the money is kept or if you restrain the power of the DEA strike force attorneys in Georgia, they are going to have their powers restrained to seize monies that will go to their own drug enforcement, not national drug enforcement, their own drug enforcement and local police officers. The amount seized here was probably three police cars to the local Georgia city that participated in this seizure. And there is then also obviously a public concern that we don't want these things to be determined by impartial remote juries. We want to be able to keep our hands on our money.
Okay, good. Last question before we do some commercials. Sometimes you talk to a lawyer and ask him how his case is going, and the lawyer says, I can't talk about it yet because the case is still pending. Or maybe we're working on a settlement. I can't talk about it. Now, why is this a good strategy? Wouldn't it be better to have the press screaming that ex-casino assaulted this guy? Wouldn't that make them want to settle faster?
Are you suggesting that sometimes that's what I'm saying to the press or whatever?
There have been on this show, you've said you can't really talk about certain cases. You have said a settlement was reached to the satisfaction of all parties, and I can't talk about that. So that's, you have said that.
Yes.
I have never heard you say exactly that you can't talk about a case that's pending, but
there are restrictions from the disciplinary rules about talking about a case that's pending. There's also issues vis-a-vis the disciplinary rules that are applicable to attorneys as to whether or not that's legitimate concerning the First Amendment. All of that being said, I don't try my cases in the public forum, and I accept the overall disciplinary restriction that is not where cases get tried. I am a part of a system that tries them in courts. Now, the how is this different from the case that I just addressed with you? It is different because I have not said anything about liability. I have not. What is at issue in that case is a pure legal doctrine called minimum contacts and the remote jurisdiction or jurisdiction under a case called International Shoe. It has already been determined. It may end up in front of the Supreme Court, but the issues that we're addressing are already subject to a published court order, which is far different from addressing something that is still being that has no public record on it yet and is being fought about between the attorneys.
So on the Fiore case, is there any chance it's going to go in front of a jury?
Certainly.
Then, it's so that, and there's some chance.
But they aren't going to make any decision on the issue that has been decided in the courts to this point, because that issue is purely a question, a legal question, not a question of fact that the jury would be addressing.
Okay, so even if one of those potential jury members happens to be listening to our show, that wouldn't affect anything.
I maybe they like my voice. I've just softened it.
Well, good. All right, so at this point, I usually ask Shaq what we learned tonight, and so I'm assuming so far he's learned nothing, although he will learn, he will listen to this show later when he tells me why he wasn't here today. And so the question is, what did I learn today? So I actually learned that a strategy card can be considered a mechanical device, which I find fascinating, although I do not plan to change whether or not I sell them. I always enjoy having Bob here. The South Point has more than 10,000 video poker games, returning more than 99%. That's more than anybody else. Through December 24th, the South Point will charge you 50% if you use accumulated slot club points for things like rooms, meals, gift shop, liquor store, show tickets, New Year's Eve tickets, etc. This is a regular December promotion at the casino. Smart players save their points all year long and redeem them at this point. December 17th and December 25th offers double points, midnight to midnight. December 17th is kind of a weird day. South Point usually does it on holidays, but it is just after the NFR radio goes away, and this is a dead time in Las Vegas the week before Christmas. And so the South Point says, oh, well, all of you who are alive, come here. Now, the South Point, like many other casinos in town, is offering a variety of New Year's Eve options. Shirley and I have been invited to more than a dozen places across town and the country, but we're spending the evening at the Grand Ballroom in South Point. The Frankie Avalon concert will be nice. That's not a main attraction for us. There's actually the dance band of Wes Winters. We like dancing to his music, and so that's where we're going to dance the night away. At the Palms, every Friday and Saturday evening, 7 p.m. from now through the end of December, they have a $70,000 Greedy Grinch money bags drawing. Based on your play, the first five players pick a money bag whose prices range from $350 to $3,500, and the average more than $900. Five other players win an iPad mini, an Apple gift card, $100 in cash. You can earn double drawing entries on Sunday and Tuesday. If it helps you decide how much to play, last week I played, I had 4,500 tickets, which was a considerable amount of play, and I did not get called on Friday. And on Saturday, I got called ninth place, and it moved up a bit when there were some no-shows, so I ended up with a $350 Apple gift card. The PEW gifts on Monday, Wednesday, Friday are gift cards at a rate of 0.20%. So this takes for video poker players, or 2% for slot players. Even though the rate on slot for slot players is a lot higher, it's a better bet to play video poker because it costs a lot more to play slots. At videopoker.com, the monthly contest will, for the last 9 days of the month, will be Dream Card. Dream Card is a 10-coin per line game where periodically, instead of a fifth card, you get a Dream Card, which is the best possible card given the first four cards. Although the Dream Card is almost always the best one available, you can change it if you wish. If you think the machine is not giving you the best one, you can change it to anything you want. In the contest, make sure you pick the game with the highest volatility, which is triple-double bonus if it's offered. Don't know if it will be. You need, if that was not offered, then probably double-double bonus will be the one with the highest volatility. To win in this particular contest, you need to get more than a dealt royal. So dealt aces with a kicker counts the same as a dealt royal with in triple-double bonus. So these contests reward the luckiest players, but there's $1,000 offered, and lots of people like to try for it. Next week, our guest is going to be Jeff Hall. Jeff is a British chap, and he has invented table games. The two of his biggest known games are Blackjack Switch and Power Blackjack. He also has a new game out now called Free Bet Blackjack. On a personal basis, I have cataracts in both eyes, and tomorrow I'm undergoing lens replacement in my right eye, assuming all goes well. In a few weeks, I'll have the same procedure done on my left eye. While I know it usually works out okay, there are risks, and I am nervous about it. Eyes are extremely important organs. It kind of reminds me how I felt before I had a vasectomy. Now, that turned out well, and I'm hoping this one does too, but I'm kind of nervous about it. All right, we got a few more minutes. Let me throw another question at
Actually,
Bob. Yeah,
I have something. On the last thing we were talking about with
cataract surgery.
No, I wish you the best on that. And
thank you.
You'll be in my thoughts.
Thank you.
You finished with the card being a mechanical device. I don't think by any legitimate stretch of the imagination that it could be a mechanical device. What we're dealing with here is prosecutorial discretion, and I'm going to give you a couple of examples of how bizarre that can be,
okay,
especially in this town. In my personal library from cases I've done over the years, including some criminal, I have had, and both were advantage gamblers, I've had a number of advantage gamblers that were arrested for battery on a security officer or arrested for trespassing who were actually attacked by security. Oftentimes there will be a video. This has passed through my office. Two cases where the patron was indisputably and irrefutably attacked by security. First hands, violent. One was a punch. The other was being thrown against a gate by a number of people.
On video.
On video. And I am telling you, what I'm talking about here is just a clear punch while the guy is standing there with his hands at his side. Okay? On the one that was punched, he was charged with battery on a police officer, on the security officer. He was arrested for it. The video came out. The prosecutor had the video. I said, dismiss the case. Her words to me were, as he was going to the ground and the other security guards were coming on top of him, if you look, you see his hand reach out and grab one of those security guards by the neck. I said, holy crap.
When he's on the ground after the punch.
No, he's on his way down with three people taking him to the ground, and the prosecutor is telling me, take a plea because I've got him with his hands on one of their necks. Okay? That's how bizarre prosecutors can get. In the other one, which if you look for it, you can find it reported.
Did that prosecutor see reason, or did they
actually? That prosecutor saw reason later, when I threatened to take her to the bar, and I believe she talked to her supervisor or superior who reviewed the tape and said, get rid of this piece of garbage. But she wanted this person who was absolutely a victim to take a plea. That's where prosecutorial discretion goes, and that is how we're looking at it in this town at times. The other example, okay, with the thrown into the gate, the judge saw this and went, why are we here? Now, I want you to hear what the prosecutor said, and this is paraphrased. Your Honor, you've heard from the security guard that Mr. So-and-so attacked him. Okay? That is direct evidence. Now, I will admit that the video seems to show something that is pretty much the opposite. However, you are the judge, and it is your job to judge the evidence or weigh the evidence. And you have every ability to ignore the videotape and accept the security guard's statement as wholly credible and the video as not credible and convict this man. That's you. Good, you're laughing. I hope I conveyed how silly this is. That's where prosecutors go. I have another one.
Did the judge ball that lawyer out in court?
No.
Really?
No. But did dismiss the case earlier than it was even called for because it did appear just so ridiculous. Another one. Here's the police report. This one went away as well. But the police report says subject was being 86'd.
All right.
We walked the subject out of the casino.
Okay.
The subject began to flee the premises. We chased, tackled, and subdued the subject.
Why?
Never did figure it out. But I showed the written report to the prosecutor who said, so? And I said, it says right here that she was doing exactly what she was supposed to do, which is get out of Dodge. There's no crime here. It took another 2 months with that prosecutor and me on the phone with the prosecutor, and finally a video showing up and the complainant saying, because they got the argument, that, you know, we really don't think there was a crime here. For that prosecutor to let that case go. So what you have are incidents where prosecutors are, now I am suggesting that they might favor casinos, but really what they favor is when a case comes into them, they have a feeling that our job is to convict, our job is to get that conviction. It's not necessarily tied to casinos. And the fact that there's no crime doesn't seem to affect their judgment like it should, and they continue with their prosecutorial discretion.
All right. Good. Now, the next question is, you may not have heard of it before. And so we got it from gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com. We've not talked about it prior to this, so this might be off the top of your head. There's a new type of online poker site. It's called Skillbet. Skillbet apparently claims to be perfectly legal in 28 states, the states where wagering on games of skill like chess is allowed. Now, it's currently accepting credit card deposits and PayPal, which other sites are not doing, from American people or players. Now, the idea is that you and your opponents are both dealt the same cards and play against the same computer bot opponents. The difference between what you win against the computers and what your opponent wins is your profit or loss. The lawyers for the site argue that it's completely legal, but some players online are skeptical. Do you have, I don't know if you've heard of this, do you have any feeling as to whether or not this would be legal under current statutes? We got about 3 minutes.
My feeling is that it's not. It's just a feeling, okay?
It's not legal.
That it's not legal. But my reason for that is, boy, this is all tying. Our entire session here, Bob, is tied back to the same thing. The people who were running online poker when it got taken down thought that they were legal. Before that, the people that were running those sites in country thought they were legal. Okay? This country has hundreds of years of people looking at statutes and looking for holes in the statutes, and prosecutorial discretion saying, we're going to close the hole, not the legislature, and people going to jail. Example, I used to be a tax attorney. mm-hmm. there were zero to infinite write-offs available under the tax code for certain tax shelters. Okay, and the language was there. The words were there. And the courts said no. And the reason the courts said no is it walks like a duck, it quacks like a duck, it's a flipping duck. Okay? You can't do this. Nobody would reasonably believe that the law... This is an argument I saw a federal judge make. Nobody could reasonably believe that the law is what the law says in this case.
Really?
Yes. And I think
that
this...
Is he trying to get a promotion to a Supreme Court position?
I don't know how to react to that. But in this case, with the juggernaut of persecution and prosecution of internet gambling that has gone on up to this point over the last decade, this seems to me to walk like a duck and quack like a duck, and so I reach my conclusion.
All right, good. So it's probably illegal. Don't quote him on that. All right.
It's dangerous.
All right. So, good. So that's all we ask. Now, you don't... Now, for some reason, there's a lot of lawyers who go out there advertising. I have never seen a Bob Nersessian ad out there. Now, in Vegas, with a lot of gamblers, that would seem like to be pretty good. Pretty good philosophy to add. So why don't you have ads?
Well, one, I'm too busy to have ads.
You're too busy to create the ads?
No, I'm too busy to take in extra work. Two, I have advertised in my church paper, the little bitty square that is a shrunken copy of my business card. That was for the church, not for me. It's
paying $50 a month for an inclusion of your business card in the church bulletin is not exactly what we would call advertising.
I understand. I'm very, this is a personal philosophy of mine. I'm very tied to history. I think of myself as a constitutional attorney and things like that. And I think of this profession that I'm in as a profession, not a job.
Okay.
Lawyers don't advertise, in my opinion. Now, obviously,
old school
they
approach.
Do. Yeah, it's just my old school approach. And the fact that I've been able to get over on the industry without doing it, I think itself says that it might not be necessary. And I know we're out of time. I thank you again, Bob, for having me on. I always enjoy coming here and talking to you and your audience.
Oh, and we enjoy... although this week, so far, I've enjoyed it more than Michael has. I must say that. This has never happened before. I did, during the show itself, I did get a Michael call. And, of course, my phone is on vibrate during the show. And so he did leave a voicemail that I have not yet heard. So I'm pretty sure there's a damn good reason why he isn't here. But I don't know what it is yet. And so anyway, I'm going to forgive him and give him the same Christmas present I was going to give him anyway. Which wasn't anything, because we don't exchange Christmas presents. All right. So
can I say one more thing?
You got about 10 seconds.
In honor of the rodeo here in town, y'all should see the shirt that Bob's wearing.
Oh, I used to teach country western dance, and so I have a variety of colorful country western shirts that I really only get to wear when the rodeo's in town and they think I'm from Texas or something. And so otherwise Shirley doesn't really want me out there wearing it. So
I thought you were from Graceland.
Ha. All right, well, it's time for Elvis to leave the building. Good night, everybody. Go out and hit lots of royal flushes.
You've been listening to Gambling with an Edge with your hosts Bob Dancer and Michael Shackelford. Archived versions of past shows may be found on bobdancer.com and wizardofodds.com. We welcome emails at gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com. Bob Dancer and Michael Shackelford are both on Facebook and welcome your input or questions. Our sponsors are the South Point Hotel Casino and Spa, the Palms Casino Resort, the website videopoker.com, and the website wizardofodds.com. Join us again next week for another Gambling with an Edge.